What's up, guys? Welcome back to Storytime with Uncle John. Today I got some more tales from tech support for you. Been a little busy. I'm going to try to remember to throw a couple pictures up, rebuilding our totally unsafe and very ugly front porch. And I think I've made some improvements to it, so, got to keep the wife happy, right? All right, let's do some tech support.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Guess who's losing their job? Short answer is, it's me. This happened today. Let me tell you a short story. Our company's currently undergoing migration from Google Workspace to M365 because half of the company either uses Google or Microsoft. My boss wants to use only one system. I was doing migration of one phone because we use Google device policy, and apparently the only way to get rid of it is to reinstall the whole phone. So I had one empty phone where I would transfer all the data and then factory reset the phone with the device policy. After this, transfer all the data back to the original Android phone without the device policy. After I've wiped the original phone, I've also accidentally wiped the second phone where all the data was waiting to be transferred back. So that means that I've lost all the phone data for the user and there was no backup. Photos, documents, contacts, messages, 2FAs, all gone. Whoopsie. I was asked by my boss if I can help with the migration and I said yes, even when my main role is web development. I wanted to help the company. Now I'm the biggest idiot in the IT department. By the way, happy Eclipse Day. I'm recording this at, 2:43 p.m. The sun has just started to kind of, you can see a defined line of where the shadow of the moon is on the sun. So, yeah. By the way, don't stare directly at the sun without proper equipment. Even a welding helmet works. If you have welding glasses, welding helmet, it ain't perfect, but it does work. Just don't stay staring at the sun, even with the equipment, because just don't. It's funny because with the little, solar eclipse sunglasses that you buy, we're able to use it with the phone and it does pretty good. One pro tip for you, if you're ever doing this with an eclipse, is don't hold the lens of whatever against your phone. Actually hold it away, half inch or whatever, and you'll actually get better pictures out of it, more clear pictures. So I don't know. Have you ever had a job where you've made mistakes, big mistakes where, it's pretty detrimental? I don't know. I mean, one phone, I don't know how many phones are in this company, but I mean, the guy asked you to do something that wasn't really in your wheelhouse. Mistakes are going to happen. That'd be like me doing construction for a guy and he asked me to, replace the transmission in one of the pickup trucks. Can I do it? Sure. Is it my strong suit? No. Is there a high likelihood that something's going to be forgotten about or missed and, cause issues until it's refixed? Yes. I mean, I'm not sure what this guy expected to happen, but, who will? How I fixed an old obsolete eye imaging device a hospital wouldn't dispose of. The machine is a Stratus OCT3000. It has a system unit with a Windows 2K Pro P4 512MB RAM and a 4GB DVD-RW in the optical drive as added storage. This controls the main imaging apparatus. The issue was, the imaging software wouldn't open the UI because it fails to connect to its database. First, I'd like to say that I'm a self-taught technician, so there's no way I was to fix this machine from Carl Zeiss running proprietary software. Anyways, I decided to try a hand at it. The hospital had called like 7 or so database specialists since Carl Zeiss told them they quit support for the machine in 2008. I arrive and everyone is on their laptops researching and reading the manual. I take the captain's seat and start exploring. I then find myself in control panel and spot Interbase Manager. Opening it shows that there are 0 servers running and 0 databases. Apparently the other guys didn't get to it before because they dropped everything to focus on my explorational progress. We figured out that it runs on SQL. I don't know SQL, so they immediately start copying the various schemas we found. We all leave that night without any progress, but the hospital staff say that I've made the most progress since they started bringing in technicians. I spend days researching, and then I find this out. Carl Zeiss wasn't helpful because there were no such issues online, so I had to resort to contacting various IT personnel from hospitals that had similar equipment, even companies that sold them, but none were familiar with the matter or could help. I then resort to looking for the company that made Interbase, but they had rebranded twice. They happen to support the Interbase version 7.1 that we have, but they wouldn't assist us since the machine is outdated. Well, I said to hell with it. I'll try creating a new database because I always wanted to explore the IB console program I saw a few weeks back when I was there. I created a new server and database, but couldn't populate the domain, tables, etc. tabs, although IB Manager recognized the database, but the imaging software still wouldn't load the database. The hospital later called me saying that Carl Zeiss sent someone all the way there to fix it and that I should also go. I then find him scrolling through company troubleshooting manuals for the machine, which weren't of any help because they implied we reboot the machine. I proceed to tell him of my progress. Stunned by what I did, he saw the only option now was to reinstall the imaging software, which he had a copy of. It still wouldn't load the database until after I created a new server and database from a database file that I spotted in a folder named Backup in the DVRW. I'm not sure if reinstalling the imaging software helped, but I'm glad we met with the guy because he expressed his respects and took my number, and that made me happy. I'm not sure why hospitals, medical offices of all types do this. They will use software and actual physical hardware to the point where it's absolutely useless. We already know. Almost anybody who deals with any kind of tech, even on a personal level like I do here at home, we all know that eventually things are going to stop being supported. While you can keep them running, to a certain extent, at some point it's just not worth it. And I'm quite sure that somebody high up, at least one person, was given plenty of notice that they were going to stop supporting this particular hardware, software, whatever. Yeah. I mean, I know people that still keep, you know, old Windows NT and whatever, 95s and all those old machines running, but it doesn't really make them useful if you're trying to make money or, you know, heal people's eye problems with them. Tighten up your VGA. This is the first time I've actually posted something on here, so sorry if it's not quite in keeping with what people post here. For context, I go to school in the UK, and I've helped my teachers with technology many times over the years. This story takes place in a physics lesson. I'm sitting in class and notice the projector is making a very yellow picture, and I ask the teacher if he has any idea why, and he says that he's already asked IT for a new bulb. Suddenly, I feel a sense of deja vu. I've fixed this before. When I was much younger and still in infant school, look it up, the teacher had a projector producing a blue-tinted picture, but I had noticed that the menus of the projector looked suspiciously normal. I proceeded to push the VGA connector fully in, and surprise, the projector wasn't broken. Back in the present, I pushed the VGA connector back fully into the rear of the PC, and another projector's fixed. The moral of this story? Always tighten up your VGA connectors, folks. Yeah, loose connectors can be a bear. It's something so simple, but something we always tend to overlook. Even when, you know, people will tell you to, you know, check your plugs, you know, if you're not getting power, power's intermittent, they tell you to check the plugs at the wall or your, you know, your power switch, your power surge protector. But we very rarely will reach to the back of the PC. You know, a laptop's one thing, but the back of the PC, I don't really look at the back of the PC. Once it's set up, it's set up to make sure that everything's tight back there. Now, owning cats, I have learned over the years that, you know, you have to check in, under, around, and behind things because they will go places that, A, they know they shouldn't be, you know they shouldn't be, and that you wouldn't think that they could possibly fit in. So, there's that. Also, speaking of strange picture colors, did anybody when you were a kid ever try to put external speakers on top of your television at home? Like, back before flat-screen TVs, the old tube televisions, they will change the colors of a VGA bubble glass screen, just so you know. And sometimes it goes away, depending on how long you left it there and how big the magnet is in your speaker. Sometimes that burn-in is there forever, and people's faces are going to be purple and green. So there's that.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Email the support address to get a ticket created? No, I'd rather have it get lost in the shared inbox than do that. I've only made one post here before, but seeing as I've gathered enough small to perhaps medium stories to tell, I figured I'd drop this little memorable one here. To start, our help desk uses a shared inbox for a ton of things. Network alerts, Veeam backup, VEEAM? I don't know. Successes and failures, ERP system generated emails from customers and vendors, etc. These go to us because the folks on the other end decided to reply to a no reply address. So it gets routed to us, then routed to our BI, BIS teams for them to send to the right branch of our company. Basically, the inbox can get pretty messy. Now, we put a bunch of rules in place to route things into a better organized folder so that it's way more clean than it's ever been. However, one issue remained. Our ticketing system is linked to zyx@domain.com address. So it'll create a ticket right away, put into the queue, and then sends an email to the support inbox. This address is posted several times in training material and on onboarding emails that get sent upon someone's hire. We also send a 6-month reminder on best ways to contact the help desk. Call or email, both of these are stressed several plus times again in said emails. To some degree, it can be boring reading an email that amounts to a few paragraphs of information. Now, it's not written like a book, obviously, but I digress. Not everyone reads these things. We've also set an out-of-office message as well, saying to email zyx@domain.com or call the help desk phone number or extension. I realize not everyone can read things in a corporate environment, as this whole story would never have happened if they could. This is more evident when the same folks don't pass phishing tests and repeatedly fail back to back to back, so on and so forth. That's a story for another time, perhaps. Now, nothing prevents users from emailing the shared inbox directly. We'll call it abc@domain.com. But it becomes an issue when it gets high volume. Not everyone's issues get looked at, and more often than not, we just ignore it because we've told the entire company multiple times the two best ways to contact the help desk. My story begins now. Wow, that was long. It wasn't a super busy day, but we were sorting through some alerts that didn't route properly. New rule wasn't working. I love Outlook. This was also after we set the out-of-office messages to, again, advertising the correct methods of contacting us. A user sends a request directly to the shared inbox with an urgent issue, with something regarding an issue with our ERP system. I send the typical follow-up that I have saved as a template. Due to the amount of times I've had to do this to get people trained like good end users and follow best practices, it made sense to have it 2 clicks away, to email zyxdomain.com for the fastest response and to have a ticket created and placed in the queue. She promptly did, and within 5 minutes I had the information I needed and routed it off to our BI, BIS programming team. Job done. What's the rest of the story, you might ask? No less than 10 minutes later, she emails abc@domain.com again with a random issue that's not significant. Did I not just tell you to always email zyx@domain.com no less than 10 minutes ago? Well, since the out-of-office message states this inbox is not monitored actively, I complied with that particular logic. I read her email, and I definitely didn't see the email. The next day, she called in and inquired about it. I played dumb. I've learned this well from dealing with users long enough now. Most of them who don't know any better won't question me. Those who do, however, know me quite well. I can't do this with. They know my capabilities as a technician. Lol. Do you have a ticket number? No. Well, who took the request? You're not sure. Oh, okay. Well, did you email zyx@domain.com? Crickets. Yep, can't be ignorant if we caught you. I did end up helping her and really driving home the point of using the right methods in the process. Real quick fix, too. Actually, would have taken less than a minute had she chosen to call the previous day. To date, she's one of the best ticket emailers we have now, and provides more than enough info in most cases for us to either solve it in less than 10 minutes or route it to BI, BIS programming in less than 5 minutes upon ticket creation. I don't know what most of those initials and acronyms mean, but the bottom line is, processes are put in place for a reason. Follow them. It's not difficult. Everybody wants to create their own way to do things or just be lazy and just follow the most direct route of doing replies. And 90% of the time, emails that you get that are just generic company-wide emails are going to say somewhere on them, do not reply, no reply, because this is not a monitored email address. But people are going to people and they're going to do dumb stuff. So it's always DNS. Or is it? Let's first go back 2 weeks. We get an email reminder to pay for our main website. All right, cool. We forward it to the finance department so they can pay it. Now back to the present. Around 1 p.m., we get an email from a vendor that they lost connection to a server they monitor on our network. Okay, we look into that but can't see much. 30 minutes later, someone else cannot send emails to Gmail addresses. It returned, this mail has been blocked because the sender is unauthenticated. Okay, weird. We look into it but can't see what's going on. Around this time also, people are suddenly unable to connect via VPN. Then a few phones using an emergency calling app for elderly citizens, we support healthcare workers, lose connection to the server. We check the phones and can't fix it. 30 minutes later, every phone lost connection to the app. Now it's a pretty big deal. Suddenly, no emergency calls come in, so people might literally die. We scramble a ragtag team of tech support superstars trying everything. Nothing's been changed. We call our MSP, who is also unable to see the culprit. Is the firewall blocking something it shouldn't? Nah. Is it the Russian hackers coming for us? Fortunately not. We check the DNS and see some error that it cannot connect to the domain or something similar. Oh god, it's always DNS. But how do we fix the DNS? We then find out our domain has been disabled. I then remember this email from 2 weeks back and think, F, did they forget to pay the bill? We managed to pay the bill, which was like $10, and within 10 minutes it's all back up. Cut to the next day. It was not the finance department who didn't pay the bill, but the hosting site apparently has no record that we paid it. Moral of the story, always check DNS first. I think we all learned a lot about crisis situations. It doesn't happen often, but sometimes with utilities, whether it's internet, cable, same in my case, water, phones, you know, like landline phones, electricity, you know, sometimes we forget to pay the bill and then, you know, your service gets interrupted and all of a sudden it's like, oh crap, I forgot to do something. Okay. So you rewind, you fix it, you wait for that hour, 2 hours, end of business day, reconnect, whatever. Then there are other times when you'll pay the bill, you have a confirmation number in your hand, they still disconnect the service because somehow it didn't get in their system that you actually paid the bill. Like the money's actually been taken out, you have it, you still disconnected me. Like, it's almost like their system had a hiccup, because I know most of it's automated these days. They won't shut anything off until somebody gets a notice on their desk that says, bill's not paid, shut off. Like they must get a daily list that says, you know, today's shut offs or something. I also notice that most of the time, those same people who you call will find some way to put it back on you. If it's my mistake and I didn't pay the bill on time, then fine, it's on me. I accept that. Here's my money. Please connect me again. But when it's on them, you've paid your money and you still get disconnected, it's, oh no, it must be something you did. Really, people? Hey boss, I fixed the issue. Great. Did you fix that issue? To make sense of this story, I have to give an unfortunately long amount of backstory. A few months ago, we replaced one of our FedEx label printers because it was printing faded labels constantly over multiple boxes of labels. Everything was too light. It was basically unreadable. These are Zebra ZM400s, which are solid printers, but they're old as hell. The ones we're using have been in use since at least 2010. On my recommendation, we bought two upgraded versions of the same printer. We have two print stations, so I figured it'd be smarter just to go ahead and replace both. And I installed one of them at the station where the failing printer was. There were some minor issues, but everything got sorted out and was working fine. A couple weeks ago, the new printer started doing the same thing the old one was doing. The woman who is technically my boss has been on my ass to fix it. So today, I finally gave in and followed her solution, which was to replace the printer because, obviously, the new one you made us buy is broken, so we should just send it back. It should be noted that my boss is the company's accountant. Just an FYI. It should also be noted that while the warehouse guys were cleaning out some old equipment in the warehouse, they found an old label printer like the one we had before that was still new in the box. My boss has been trying to get me to use it ever since. So this morning I configured the replacement printer to get it ready to swap in. Everything worked fine. Labels were dark and crisp and easily readable. I was testing it at a different station. So after I tested it, I moved it over to the station where it needed to be. Did a test print and the labels looked exactly the same as they did on the broken printer. Faded and unreadable. Swapped out the labels, everything looked great again. Turns out the box of labels was bad. Important note, these are direct thermal printers, so really the only part of the equation that should be a failure point is the labels. I already knew that, but nobody would listen to me until I proved it. It's almost like they think I don't know what I'm talking about. Wow, dude. Anyway, so I emailed my boss and let her know. This is word for word what I sent her. The printer wasn't the problem. It was the box of labels. Switched out the printer and had the exact same issue. Switched out the labels and everything was fine. It's not a problem with the printer, so I would keep the new one we've already unboxed since it's working fine and send the one we haven't opened yet back. This is the exact response I get back. Good to know. Curious, did this help to make the order numbers more legible? No. No, it didn't. I'm just telling you the problem is fixed for the effing hell of it. You know, it's one thing to be on a phone call with your boss, tell them something, and they really didn't listen or didn't hear what you were saying because they were futzing around with something else or trying to multitask, and they say something like that or ask you to repeat. That's bad enough, you know, because verbally, sometimes I'm only tuned half in and I only pick up parts of it, and I'm like, can you repeat that for me? I don't know what I heard, but it just wasn't complete, and it's my fault. Please repeat. But when you're reading a black and white email or instant message or whatever, and you still have to ask that question, that's kind of dumb. All right, guys, sorry for the lack of cats today. They're around, but they're just all out of sorts today, so they're just kind of roaming around. There was one stuck in this shade here a little while ago. Dimey actually came over and sat on the computer. By the way, for those of you asking, the black one is Dime, the black tuxedo cat. My daughter had a thing about coins. I don't know why. And we had Dime, Nickel, which is the fluffy white and gray one, and we had Quarter, who unfortunately passed last year. My middle daughter, she has a rescue cat that got dumped in front of our house. People have asked about that cat. He's doing fine, fat and sassy and happy. He doesn't really leave her room much. That's his rescuer, and that's where he wants to stay, is on the second floor. So can't really fight that. His name is Bluey. He's a blue Russian long-haired cat. I wanted to name him Ruble to stay with the coin theme, but I got outvoted. So welcome to dadhood. All right, till the next one, we'll see you.